Okay, when and where were you born?
I was born in Madison, Wisconsin on October 28th, 1968.
What was it like?
Being born?
No, growing up in Madison.
Oh, well, I didn't actually grow up in Madison. I grew up in Wanakee. I was just born in Madison. So, growing up in Wanakee, we kind of had to create our own opportunities, our own fun, because there really wasn't a whole lot to do there. There wasn't a lot of organized activities like there is today. I mean, there were some, but it was a pretty small area of the world. Like, I think it was probably like 2 square miles, the whole town, and there was no stoplights and there was no transportation outside of, like, if you went into Madison, you had to have your parents drive you or something, and it wasn't like you did that very often. So we kind of just were self-contained in this little town and had to make our own fun while we were there, I guess. I don't know.
Okay. Who were your parents and what were they like?
Well, my parents were Arlene and Richard Schmitz. And they were both from really big Catholic families. They had both grown up in Wanakee, and they lived there their whole lives. So they pretty much knew everybody and were related to everybody. They went to the same Catholic grade school that I went to, and they were like elementary school sweethearts from third grade on. So, I don't know, my mom was kind of the life of the party. She was always the one who hosted all the family events for her big extended. She had there were 13 siblings in her family. And since we lived on Main Street, we were kind of the hub where everybody gathered. Like, any out-of-town relatives that came in or whatever, they always stopped at our house. It was always kind of like the central meeting place for her extended family.
What was your dad like?
Was my dad like? So the dad that I know and how I remember him was just kind of always this, like, very even-keeled, non-emotional, just, like, steady rock in the family. And I don't know that he was always like that, but he, like, I don't really have any memory of him not wearing earplugs. He just walked around the house with earplugs in because there were five girls, and he was just so outnumbered. And, like, I don't know at what point he just kind of said, like, I'm not going to engage in this environment anymore. But that's kind of what I remember from growing up. It's not like we sat around and had big political discussions at the dinner table or anything. It was just pretty much like, kind of get through. So, but apparently he used to be kind of on the, like, kind of wild side before he was a parent. So one of the stories that, you know, obviously was before my time, was that my parents were dating in high school, and my grandpa, my mom's dad, didn't like my dad, and he didn't think my dad was good enough for his daughter, and my mom's family was a little bit, like, on the wealthier side, and, you know, my dad's side was okay, but, I mean, they're all pretty much just poor Catholic people, and my mom's family just happened to have a big farm, and so they were a little bit wealthier. Anyway, and I think because my dad was notorious for kind of getting in trouble, just little stuff, like, you know, I don't know, just kind of shenanigans, not, like, serious trouble with the law or anything, but just shenanigans. So my grandpa didn't like him, and so he told my mom that she couldn't marry him. And when my mom was 19, I believe it was, she was 18, she was 18, my grandpa was driving on a tractor, and apparently he didn't hear because of the noise of the tractor. He didn't hear the sound of the train coming, and he was hit by a train.
Hey guys, we're doing a recording in here. Can you be quiet?
Thanks, Ryan. So, hey Ryan, we're recording. Can you
shut up?
You didn't see the recording light.
Yeah, well, you made the noise.
So after, so my grandpa didn't hear the sound of the train, and he was killed instantly when he was riding on his tractor out in the fields. And ironically, my mom then, you know, within a year or so, married my dad, and I don't think my grandpa would have ever allowed her to marry him if he had lived. So I guess I wouldn't be here, and neither would you, if my grandpa hadn't been killed by that train. Kind of crazy to think about it.
Yeah, okay. Did you ever get in any trouble, and what was the worst thing you did?
Oh my gosh. Did I ever get in any trouble? The biggest thing I got in trouble for was my senior year. I didn't think I was getting wild and out of control. I mean, I certainly wasn't doing anything that, like, was really bad, but apparently I was like just starting to push the boundaries and kind of take advantage of the situation, and I really missed a lot of school. My mom was a night nurse, so she worked from like 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. and so she would come home in the morning and she would go right to sleep, and my dad would wake me up for school, and he would literally bring me hot chocolate every morning to wake me up and make sure I was awake so I'd get up and go to school. Well, long story short, lots of times I drank the hot cocoa and it made me feel sleepy. I went back to sleep after he made me hot cocoa. So I would wander downstairs at like 11:30 noon, and my mom would be like, "What are you still doing here?" Because she'd be already up from her morning nap, and I missed all of my morning classes already. Anyway, so I was kind of pushing the line there. But then ultimately, I went to Chicago to meet up with some of my friends that marched with the drum corps with me and with my cousin Lil. And we went downtown, and we went to see Cats, which was all the rage in the 80s. And somehow my friend's rental car got towed, and we didn't have the money to get it bailed out. And long story short, I stayed at my cousin Lil's, which was no big deal because it was my mom's twin sister. But apparently I was really pushing the boundaries because I missed like 3 days of school because I was staying in Chicago, and I didn't call my mom because, you know, it's long distance. There's no cell phones. I kind of thought my aunt would take care of it. And she didn't. And so my mom was really mad that I was like basically just skipping school and going off on my own and doing my own thing. And so when I finally did get on a bus that my aunt put me on to go back to Madison, I got to Madison and I called my mom for a ride to get home. And she told me to figure it out on my own. And there were no Ubers or taxis or anything like that. And so that was probably the worst trouble I was ever in, because I really like had to figure it out. I got on a city bus thinking it was heading a direction that would take me to one of my friend's house that lived in Madison, who was going to school in Madison, and then it immediately turned a corner and started going a different way. So I had to get off. Like, shoot, I guess I'll just walk. So I walked like 3 miles with my horribly rolling suitcase to a friend's house. And anyway, my mom was not very happy with me. I finally called my best friend's mom. She came and got me.
Did you ever drink in high school?
Well, you know, I grew up in a different time. You know, the drinking age when I was in high school was 18. And actually, my best friend, Tina, her sister was 11 months older than she was. And her sister, when she turned 18, was able to drink legally. But they changed the law in less than a year. They went from 18 to 19. And before my friend Tina turned 19, they changed it to 21. Like, that's how fast it went from 18 to 19 to 21. So her sister, who was only 11 months older than her, was able to drink for almost 4 years more sooner than she was, right? So there was a lot of kind of, like, disgruntled hostility. It's kind of like, you know, you're looking forward to being a senior and getting all these privileges, and one of them was drinking. And then suddenly it's like, wait, you can't actually do that until you're a senior in college now? That's crazy talk. So, and like I said, you know, we didn't have, like, a lot of things to get into trouble with because it's just this little small town. And
did you ever drink in high school?
So, you know, we might have indulged, you know, a little sooner than legally we were allowed to do that.
It's one of the questions.
Some of my friends.
Get out of here, Luna. Get out of here.
Some of my friends certainly did, yes.
Did you drink in high school?
No. No.
Shut up!
I'll tell you a funny story about drinking in high school. So my sister Lucy...
No, I don't want to hear that. Okay, the question is, did you drink in high school?
Let me answer your question. Patrick, this is my interview. So my sister Lucy decides you can't go to college not having ever had anything to drink because that's irresponsible. You got to learn how to drink at some point, right? So she takes me and my best friend Tina again, and we go to sleep overnight at her best friend Mike's house. And Mike's parents are out of town. And they decide, okay, we're going to get these two drunk so they can know what it feels like before they go to college, right? And I just remember throwing up into the, you know, those drains in the basement floor for, like, when your laundry overflows and there's a grate on the floor. I remember throwing up into the grate of Mike Schomer's basement with my sister holding my hair back so my hair wouldn't get in my puke, and just thinking, why would anybody ever want to do this? So, you know, I kind of just decided at an early age, I don't like that feeling. I don't like feeling out of
control.
How
old were you when that happened?
Oh, I was probably a freshman.
Was that the last time you drank in high school?
It was the last time I got drunk in high school.
Is that the last time you drank in high school?
The last time I got drunk in high school.
Is that the last time you drank in high school?
Okay, what's your next question?
That's the question.
Okay, so I'll say pass. Let's move on to the next one.
Okay, did you ever smoke weed in high school?
I didn't.
Okay. What was your best childhood memory?
The best childhood memory? Gosh, you know, we didn't have much, but I had a lot of really good memories growing up. One of my favorite memories is playing catch with my dad in the backyard. He used to play softball, play catch with me. That was awesome. When my cousins from Alaska would come and visit, we would sit on the front porch. I just remember, like, the feeling of the humidity and the rain. They don't experience lightning like we do in Wisconsin. And they were so fascinated by thunderstorms and lightning and sitting outside on a porch and just watching it all happen that it was kind of like experiencing it for the first time myself through their eyes because they were so excited about it. So that was a pretty cool memory.
Who are your best friends and what were they like?
Well, I've told you about Tina already. Tina was a great dancer. She was just kind of always up for having a fun time, but she was, you know, really a serious, strong student. So she wasn't really wild. She just, you know, was somebody that I could be silly with and had fun with her. My friend Kayla was definitely wild. She was on the wild side. I mean, she would do things like, you know, we marched with this drum and bugle corps, and she would always use, because I was Wanakee's junior miss, she would always use that as her, like, like get out of jail free card, like nothing bad's gonna happen because I'm with Ellen, she's Wanakee's junior miss, and she would never do anything that's gonna get us into trouble kind of thing. So she'd get her parents to say yes to things as long as she was with me, right? So one time when we marched with Drum and Bugle Corps, we'd meet people from other corps, and like, so our corps was in Iowa, but we knew there was an all-male corps in Madison and an all-male corps in Rosemont, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago. And so she started like kind of pseudo dating this guy from a corps in Chicago. And Wanakee in Chicago at that time, it was like 3 hours apart. They didn't have high speed interstate in between, right? So her dad was in the military and his license plate said it was Major Bob, M-A-J-B-O-B. And so, like, the combination of the license plate was a get-out-of-jail card because nobody's going to ever, like, mess with somebody who's in the military or give them a ticket or whatever. At least she thought that. And with my junior miss status, she'd get her parents to say yes to stuff. And we would drive all the way to Chicago from Wanakee for a party with a bunch of college guys. We were, like, 16 years old. And she would just tell her parents she was sleeping over at my house because I was Wanakee's junior miss. And parents were pretty trusting. They didn't really check to see what time we were getting home. And as long as I was home by like 1 or 2 in the morning, they didn't question it. So we would go all the way to Chicago for parties. And parents had no idea where we were, what we were doing.
What did you think your life would be like when you're older?
I didn't really think beyond about 10 minutes in my life. That was pretty much my philosophy. You know, everything was kind of about, like, what's happening this weekend. I didn't really think a lot about, like, what I was going to do or what I was going to be, but I kind of thought I wanted to be famous. I wanted to be, like, a famous writer or, when I was really young, like, 5th and 6th grade, I wanted to be a drummer in a rock band. So, you know, but in reality, and I never really thought very much farther past the next weekend, I guess.
How did you choose my name?
Your name?
Mm-hmm.
Michael David Linehan. Well, we have a pretty strong tradition of strong Irish names, and you were the fourth. The David part came from your dad's boss, David Elmore. We decided that was going to be your godfather. And the Michael part, you know, we just played around with a lot of good Irish-sounding names, and Michael just sounded like such a strong name. And, you know, there was obviously the little bit about, you know, when you were born. I really wanted you to be Michael, but Dad was pulling hard for Rocket, so I agreed that if you were born on the 4th of July, we could name you Rocket.
So you decided to botch that up.
So you decided you weren't quite ready to come out yet on the 4th of July, so you were Michael instead. And it wasn't until after you were born that we found out that Michaels apparently have a reputation of being kind of strong-willed, headstrong, argumentative fighter types. I'm not sure I would have picked that for you had I known that was your destiny. But I think it's a good name for you.
Okay, so what was I like as a baby and as like a young child?
As a baby. Well, the first thing I remember about you is that you came out and you looked like an alien. You were just this long, skinny string bean. Like, most babies look kind of plump and, you know, like you want to pinch them. And you were just, like, all elbows and angles. And that was, we were just like, this one's different. This one's got, like, long alien fingers that I guess turned into be great swimming paddles for you. And as a behavior-wise, like, you could not figure out your clock to save your life. You would sleep during the day, and you'd be up all night. And it just about made me crazy, because I was still trying to deal with three really little kids and their nap schedules and everything during the day, and then suddenly I'm up all night with you because you just wanted to be wide awake. And like, I distinctly remember there was this big incident where these miners were trapped in like South Carolina or something. They were trapped down in a mining, you know, like where they go down and they excavate. And there was some kind of an explosion and these miners were trapped. And it was like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting on the couch. And you're just wide awake looking at me and jabbering. And I watched as they...
How old was I?
Oh, just a couple months. Because that was in like October. So you were like 3 months old. And you were wide awake in the middle of the night. And we watched as they rescued all of those miners out of the tunnel, and like everybody else, I remember thinking everybody else doesn't even deserve the snooze in the morning. They didn't sit up and watch as every single one of them was excavated from this cave, and Michael and I did. Like, we earned the snooze. And the other one was the presidential election. So it was a rare night that I got you to sleep, the night of the presidential election with George Bush and Al Gore. And so it looked, you know, we saw the election results at the end of the night, like 11 o'clock, and George Bush was getting ready to concede. It looked like Al Gore was gonna win the thing. And so we went to bed. And of course you wake up at like 2 o'clock in the morning and you're wide awake and don't wanna go back to sleep. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll go downstairs and sit and watch TV. And that's when it was like all chaos broke loose with the election. Like, wait, what's going on? There's not an actual legit election completed yet. And Al Gore was not giving his concession speech then. And it was just, everything was up in the air for weeks. We didn't know who the president was gonna be. But I really saw that breaking news happen where most people woke up to it in the morning. But you and I, we were right there to witness it all at like 2 o'clock in the morning.
I know that one. What were the hardest moments you had when I was growing up? Like, with me.
Hardest moments with you. Oh, gosh, Michael. Oh, Michael. You know, I always say, you really don't want... Nobody ever really wants to hire a sheep. You know, I've told my students that for years. Don't be a sheep. Don't just follow the leader. Be somebody who leads the way. Be somebody who has something creative or something new to add to this world. And don't just be a sheep. And you are so not a sheep. You've never been a sheep. You have been somebody who has always led the way. And sometimes, you know, you need a little direction yourself because you lead them all into chaos. But, so, okay, one of my most prominent memories, they usually revolve around the bus. So one of them, you know, you have like a little file in your baby book of bus incident reports of Michael Linehan and how he behaved on the bus. You didn't know this, huh? But one of them in particular, you came home and you were so excited. You said, Mom, they picked me today to be a special kind of leader. Like, what? What's going on? Michael, you had good behavior at school and they're calling you out for being a leader? Like, we're thinking, finally, they figured it out. You know, they cracked the code on our little Michael and he is really a leader and that's awesome. Like, what kind of leader? And you're like, I don't know, it's some kind of leader. Like, I get special duty. I got a special kindergartner that I have to take care of on the bus. And I sit with them and I tell them how to behave and I'm a special kind of leader. And I'm like, that's awesome, Michael. Congratulations. We were like celebrating with you that night. And then, of course, like 2 days later in the mail comes the bus report. Guess what kind of leader you are, Michael? You're a ringleader. We're like, well, they did recognize that he's a leader. Special bus duty was that you had to sit up front by the bus driver with the kindergartners so you wouldn't misbehave. So
Yeah, you know, we just kind of always held our breath and hoped they'd pass you on to the next level because you were handling, you know, of course, when you took over the fifth grade classroom and got the teacher fired, that was a big deal too, but... Oh, Michael, you're going to lead the world, and hopefully you're going to choose the good side, not the dark side.
All right, if you could hit a reset button to 15 years ago, what would you do differently?
15 years ago. Okay, 15 years ago.
With me.
With you. Oh.
Yeah.
How would I raise you differently?
Yeah.
Gosh, Michael. I don't know that I'd do anything differently. I would maybe, you know, and as much as you say you hated those naps, you really needed them, but sometimes, you know, like maybe you would have done better if we'd just let you be in the pool a little bit longer instead of making you take a nap. Oh, it's really hard to say. I think that you've turned out to be a fine young man, and you're talented, and you're smart. You used to read a lot more than you do now, but I think that comes in waves, and you probably do that again when you're older and have more free time. Maybe make you read more, but you did read a lot when you were little. But I don't think I'd do anything differently. I think you're a pretty good kid.
Huh? What did you do once you graduated high school?
When I graduated high school, again, I never really looked beyond about 2 weeks. So I marched with the Drum Bugle Corps that trained on the weekends in Iowa, which was like 2 hours from where I lived. And it was like everything I lived and breathed for. Like going to Iowa, and we'd have these camps where we'd stay the weekend. And there were 120 people that marched in this drum corps. And we came from all over the country and we got together on these weekends. And it was just an absolute blast. Like so much fun, I can't even put it into words. And those people were like, it was like my tribe, you know? So I just lived for it. And so immediately after graduation, I left for Iowa for the summer. And so I lived in a house with, there were six of us that lived together in this house with my friend. With a guy who was in the Corps and his parents lived there, and they hosted six of us to live in this tiny little house in Galena, Illinois. And we practiced, you know, like 15 hours a day, and when we weren't practicing, we went on tour, toured around the country and slept on gym floors and performed at night, and then we'd drive to the next place and we'd do it all over again the next day. It was amazing. It was just a ton of fun. So then I went, in the fall, I went to community college because that's what my mom told me I was doing. I put no thought into college whatsoever. Had no idea what I wanted to be or what I wanted to do. I just knew that everybody was supposed to go to college, and so that's what I did. My mom dragged me in there, and we signed up for classes, and she's like, well, it's a pretty good idea to have like an English one and a history one, a science one. Like, going on her knowledge of what, I don't know. And so everything was signed up for because I had to go late because I was marching with drum corps all summer and I didn't get there for the regular registration. So I signed up for Native American history. I had no idea. I mean, the only thing I saw in there was American history. And I get there on the first day and I'm about 15 minutes into it. And I kind of look around and I'm like, this is all about Indians. There's a whole class just about Indians. Like, I never would have signed up for it, I don't think, if I had realized what it was. Because I don't know. I mean, I'd never really thought about taking a class on Indians before. And it turned out to be a great class. And I took every class that professor taught because he was just like, it's like Mr. McBride. Like, you just listen to him tell stories and never get sick of it, you know? So that's what I did. I went to METC for 2.5 years, and then I transferred to Madison and finished from there. That's college.
What did you do after college?
After college?
Yeah.
Well, first I got married. So Dad and I got engaged in October of my I did 4.5 years of college. So in October of my like 4.5 year, I was graduating in December. We got married. Well, the whole getting married thing was crazy. Do you know that story? Okay, so we got married early. We ended up having to get married in Georgia in November. And so Dad left for Ranger School. We got married Wednesday night. He left for Ranger School Friday morning, and he had to work on Thursday. So we didn't have much time together to do anything or make any kind of plans. So he left for Ranger School, and I went back home and finished college. And then I moved all my stuff down to Tennessee in the beginning of January after I graduated, and found us an apartment, and I studied for the GRE for 6 months before I went back to grad school.
Where did you go to grad school?
I went to Austin Peay State University, which is just a local college in Clarksville, Tennessee, right next to the Army Post, Fort Campbell.
How long were you there?
We were at Fort Campbell for 5 years. So I went to grad school for 2 years and taught for 3 years there. Yeah.
What was living on Army bases like?
Well, we didn't actually live, it's called a post for Army. We didn't actually live on post at Fort Campbell. We actually lived in an apartment that was an old high school that they converted into apartments. So imagine taking Brookfield Central and then and my English classroom would be converted into one apartment. They'd section it off with a bedroom, a living room, and a kitchen. And so we'd walk down the hallway, and each apartment door you could tell had at one point been the door to a classroom, right? So it was a really bizarre feeling to live in this apartment complex that really kind of felt like a high school, because it was. And Dad's college roommate, Scott Baggett, was our next door neighbor. Our bedroom walls adjoined his West Point roommates. And he actually got sent to Iraq, and his wife was already there. So for about 6 or 7 months, when they first got married, her husband was gone. And so she kind of was just our third wheel at our marriage, because here she is in Tennessee and she wasn't from there. She didn't have any family there or anything. And she just kind of hung out with us for the first 7 months of our marriage. And it was a lot of fun. I mean, we didn't really have any money, but we played a lot of games and hung out with a lot of Army friends, and it was fun. It's a fun time.
What's the next fort that you went to?
After Fort Campbell, Dad went down to Fort Benning, and he had a 6-month training course there. And I was still finishing up. I wanted to finish the school year, so he left in January to go to outside of Atlanta, and I stayed in Tennessee for that 6-month period. So we only saw each other usually every other weekend. I don't know if it was every weekend, but we would drive to see each other. We were about 6 hours apart. And then in the summer, I finally got down there and stayed with him in an apartment. And that was funny, because he already had a roommate. Once you've been married for 5 years, and then suddenly to have a roommate was kind of funny, because this guy Tom, who was having a third wheel again on our marriage, just because he lived in the apartment, in the bedroom right next door to us, and hanging out at the, imagine hanging out at night watching TV and you got a roommate there every single night. And that's really when Dad became best friends with Mr. Bowinkle, because he had an apartment in the same apartment complex. And so they knew each other from West Point, but they didn't really hang out together until that 5 years after graduation, when we were at the advanced course together at Fort Benning. We rollerbladed a lot. And we had street hockey sticks and pucks. And Dad was the Pied Piper. He had the sob that made this low rumble kind of noise that was really distinctive. And as soon as he drove into the apartment complex parking lot, all these kids would come running because they would hear his car, and he was the one who had all the pucks. And so, like, he's home. He'd have time to go in and strap on his rollerblades and come out with the pucks and had an instant roller hockey game ready to go out in the parking lot. So that was fun. We had JoJo then. Take her to the pond, and she'd soar for frisbees and jump into the pond and bring them back for us. Life was pretty simple before we had all you kids.
How long until you had Maddie?
Well, I got pregnant that summer. So we were getting ready to transfer to Fort Irwin, which is in California. And we went to, I went out to Fort Irwin before Dad was done with his advanced course because I needed to start teaching. So I went out there with JoJo and our stuff, met the moving truck, and found us a place to rent. So for that 6 months, when I was pregnant with Madison, I was living in Barstow, which is really just desert. I mean, it's in between LA and Las Vegas, and it's 45 miles to the post, which is literally in Death Valley. So when you left our house in Barstow, there wasn't a single billboard between Barstow and getting to Post. Like, the only way you knew where you were or how close you were getting to being there in that 45 miles was like, there's the big rock, I'm halfway there. You know, like, can you imagine? There's just like no road signs, no sense, you're just driving into the desert. And I learned the hard way that you really have to go to the bathroom before you start that 45-mile drive because there are no bathrooms along the way, and there's nowhere to stop and hide or even try to go somewhere because everybody's driving to work or home from work because there's only one road that goes to the post. So, yeah. So I did that for 6 months, driving into the sun on the way to the work and driving into the sun on the way home from work. And even though Dad and I both worked on post, we never drove together because he worked crazy long hours, way more than I did. So,
what did you do?
I was a teacher, eighth grade. I taught drama, eighth grade drama, which was just crazy.
That's a whole class.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the best part about, well, I taught drama at Fort Campbell High School. In eighth grade, I taught language arts, but we did some drama. I was the drama instructor, so we did, like, you know, a Christmas Carol play kind of thing. I think vaguely remember that. I don't remember much when I'm pregnant because your brain gets fuzzy. It was a lot of fun though. But the kicker was that, you know, so when you have a baby, you want the epidural. So an epidural is like a nerve blocker that they inject into your spinal cord that numbs you, basically like temporarily paralyzes you so you don't feel the pain, right? Revolutionized childbirth. And I don't know, like, anywhere in the United States that they don't give epidurals. Like, you have to go to a third world country not to get an epidural now, right? Well, at Fort Campbell, or at Fort Irwin Hospital, they didn't have an anesthesiologist who was certified and capable of giving an epidural. So if you had your baby on post at Fort Irwin, there's no epidural. You gotta just, like, do it old school with the screaming pain. So I was scheduled, I'm like, I'm no way am I having my baby there. I'm having it at a different hospital that gives epidurals. So the closest hospital from post, I had to drive 45 miles back to Barstow. And then it was 45 miles into Apple Valley, which was closer to, kind of on the way to Vegas, or not, kind of on the way to San Diego. So it was 90 miles from where I worked to where I could get an epidural, right? And at one point, one of my eighth graders, I had a trailer that I taught in because they were getting ready to expand the school. It was under construction, so it was too big to host all the students. So they had these temporary trailers just parked on the school campus. So I had my own trailer, which was kind of cool because I had my own climate control. And when I was pregnant, that was awesome because I just crank up the air conditioning and take my shoes off. And I was totally in my own world. Anyway, at one point I was like, I'm sure just enormous, right? And I'm getting pretty close to my due date. And at one point, one of the kids says, they're like, they're all squirrely and laughing and whatever. And finally, somebody like raises their hand to ask me a question. I'm like, okay, what is it? And like, okay, so if your water broke right now, which one of us would you let deliver your baby? I think I'm going to take an early maternity leave because the idea of any of you yahoos coming anywhere near me is enough for me to say I am so out of here. So that's kind of what did it. I took early maternity leave and I actually went in to labor on the night, my first night of maternity leave with Madison. So I was very glad that I wasn't stuck at Fort Irwin with either an eighth grader delivering my baby or a hospital with no epidural.
Okay, so when did you have Sean?
Sean was born 2 years later in Denver. And we were already out of the military. We had just moved to Denver. Well, we hadn't just moved there. We moved there like in September and he was born in June. So I was pretty much pregnant the whole time we were there. And then we moved again after he was born. So we were only there about a year. Yeah, Sean, you guys all came exactly 10 days early. So Sean, they said, was gonna be enormous. And so he had what was called an induction. They went in, scheduled it, and like gave me drugs to start the whole process so that he would just come out because he was so big. He was a big head. Still has a big head.
When did you leave Denver and where did you go?
After Denver, we went to Wheaton, Illinois. That was in the summer of 1998 when Dad started working for Gant Travel. And we went and stayed with Avi and Baba for a few months before we had our house. That was a lot of fun. It's always fun to go stay there because, you know, when you're a new mom, you're just tired all the time. Like, irrationally tired, especially when number four comes along and won't sleep at night. Like, you just give anything for sleep. And going to mom's house was, like, the best thing in the world. We'd set up the baby monitor, and she would want the baby monitor, because you guys would sleep in the room with me, because the house wasn't that big, right? So I'd have a crib in the room where I was sleeping. So we'd set the baby monitor up downstairs in the living room, and mom would get up early in the morning like normal, and she would wait to hear whatever baby it was, Sean or Madison or whatever. She'd wait to hear them on the baby monitor, like right next to my bed where I was sleeping, and she would scoot up there and scoot that baby out of the crib and let me sleep because she couldn't wait to just have her hands on the baby and like not have mom around to have to compete with that. So it was the best thing in the world. She was so awesome. You guys just ate it up. It was like having another mom because she loved you as much as I did and she just wanted to play with you.
Once you left there and you went to Wheaton, when did you have Ryan?
Ryan was born in Wheaton, and so were you. Well, actually, you were born in Winfield, right next door, the town next door. So you guys were all 2 years apart. So Ryan was born in 2000, and you were born in 2002. So everybody's 2 years apart, nice and symmetrical. And I pretty much just didn't sleep for about 8 years. That was kind of the deal. I was either seriously pregnant and not sleeping, or I was getting up in the middle of the night to feed a baby. Literally for 8 years. So that a lot of that time period is kind of a blur in my mind. And that's when I wasn't teaching. I was doing freelance writing instead.